Dad said, holding the cup between his hands. I was sipping on my own cup and started to giggle. Ain't none of us going to be able to sleep tonight. Bobby laughed. That's why I don't drink the stuff. Yeah, guess it was a bad idea to drink it right before bedtime, Jeff said. Not me. If I don't sleep a wink, it was worth it, I said. After finishing our coffee, Mel and I were ready for bed. Jeff and Thad said they were going to hang out a little longer. Someone wake me up when I need to take watch, I said, as we turned to head for the cabin. Everyone said their goodnights, and we left. After so long without caffeine, I was really feeling it. There was no way in hell I was going to be able to sleep. To my surprise, Mel passed out right away. I grabbed the NVGs and carried them back to Danny, then came back to the cabin. It was nice to just lie there. I could hear the guys talking out at the fire. Their voices were faint and seemed to drift on the wind. I closed my eyes, trying to clear my mind, and eventually drifted off. At the sound of a shot, I was confused. Did I hear that, or was it a dream? The follow-up shots told me it wasn't a dream. I jumped to my feet as rifle fire filled the air. What's going on? Mel asked as she sat up. Fear was in her eyes. Where's Tay?
I don't know, I don't know.
You got your pistol? She leaned over and picked it up. Yeah. Let me see what's going on, I said. Little Bit got out of her bag and came running over to Mel. I was stuffing my feet into my boots when there was a long, subdued burst, like something ripping. I ran out the door with my carbine in my hands to see brass flying out of Taylor's H&K. It spun through the air, twinkling in the moonlight, before bouncing off the aluminum table. She held the trigger for the entire magazine. When the weapon stopped firing, she looked at it, unsure of why it had stopped. Danny was still firing upriver. I ran and looked toward the river, searching for the muzzle flashes of the incoming fire, but the river was dark. When Danny stopped firing, I ran to him. What is it? What happened? He pointed down the bank. I followed his arm and could see a small flame from the flare. The flares went off. Someone was running across the river. Did they shoot? I asked. No, but when I heard them hit the river, I started shooting. Did you hit any of them? I didn't hear anyone yell. Taylor came over with the H&K slung over her shoulder. I looked at her with raised eyebrows. Full auto, huh? I didn't mean to. It was an accident, she said. Well, make sure it doesn't happen again. Go on and go to bed, I told her. She turned to leave, looking a little hurt and embarrassed. Hey, I called out. She turned to look at me. It was fun, though, wasn't it? A big smile spread over her face, and she nodded. Good night, kiddo. Night, Dad. Jeff and Thad came up together. They clutched the old coach gun hanging from one hand. What the hell happened? Jeff asked, looking around. Someone tripped the flare, Danny said, nodding upriver. We'll have to try and figure out where these people are coming from, I replied. I don't want any more late-night shootouts. We all nodded in agreement. The guys and I discussed the matter a bit further, and then I was overwhelmed with exhaustion. Guys, I gotta hit the hay. Jeff, mind taking over for Danny? You look white, man. Too much excitement for me, Danny said. I'm going to bed, too. Yeah, yeah. I'll watch out for your asses. Thad, want to keep me company? Thad nodded. Can't promise there's going to be any coffee left by the time you two wake up for breakfast, he said, looking over at me and Danny with a grin. Hey, don't you go wasting my coffee, Danny said, punching him in the shoulder. Night, fellas, I called out, heading back to the cabin. Once everyone was awake, We ate a quick breakfast of boiled eggs and smoked fish while discussing today's activities. Working on the tables. We all headed off to a stand of cane just downriver. Everyone worked together, the girls included, to cut and drag the canes back. We piled them up by the tables and trimmed them. To tie it all together, we used a roll of twisted rope I'd brought. It was great to have everyone working together, chattering as they did. The smell of smoke from the fire, the warm sun, and the clear morning made for a great day. Leanne and Little Bit sat in chairs by the fire and trimmed the small shoots from the canes, putting them in a pile. We collected these and bundled three or four together and used them as posts. The corners were made from four canes lashed together and buried about a foot in the ground. Initially, we wanted to make a peaked roof, but after some back and forth, we decided it was too difficult and settled on a pitched roof. We worked all day to get the frame up, and, satisfied with our work, we decided that tomorrow we would put the plastic on. Once we finished for the day, I sat by the fire, cutting a piece of cane with my knife. Suddenly, I had an idea of another way to pass the time. I grabbed a full-length piece and began to split one end, cutting it into eight sections. Then, I found a stick slightly larger in diameter and whittled it into a cone shape. I forced it down inside the cane, which spread the sections nicely. I then sharpened the ends of the sections. "Aren't you tired of working?" Danny joked. "What is that? A gig?"
"Yep. I'm thinking of trying to get some frogs tonight."
"Oh, hell yeah. Let me make one too." Soon everyone was sitting around the fire making their own spears. Well, almost everyone. Mel and Bobby made it clear they weren't going to be gigging any frogs, and Thad said he'd be happy to cook them, but he wasn't one for boats. Leanne also opted out and just sat by the fire, looking unenthused. "Hey, kiddo, you want to go with us later?" I asked her. She didn't look up from her slouched position in the chair. All she did was shake her head. "You all right?" She nodded and stood up. "I'm going to go lie down." I watched her as she walked back to the cabin. Her shoulders were sagging and she looked miserable. I frowned. Something was definitely up. Even after the gigs were done, there was still a lot of the afternoon left. The warm day was energizing and I didn't want to just sit around. Looking at Taylor, I asked, "You want to go for a walk?" She smiled and nodded, and Little Bet said she wanted to go as well. "Let me go get your sister, and we'll head out." Leanne was lying in her sleeping bag. I kicked her feet. "Hey, let's go for a walk." Her reply came back muffled. "I don't want to." "Yeah, you do. Get up. Let's take a walk." She didn't respond, so I grabbed the bottom of her sleeping bag and pulled it up, half dumping her out of the bag. "Dad, leave me alone." "No, get up. Quit feeling sorry for yourself. We're going for a walk." She tried to pull the bag around herself. "All right, I'll get a bucket of water. You're coming out of that bag one way or another," I said, and turned for the door. "All right, jeez, I'll get up." She got up and put on her shoes in silence. I waited for her by the door. She came past me and thumped down the steps, sitting on the last one. I called for the other two girls, and they came running up. Mel also walked over. "What are you guys up to?" "We're going for a little stroll. Want to come?" I asked. "Sure." We started up the trail that led to the dirt road. I was holding Mel's hand while Little Bit ran ahead with Taylor. Leanne was behind us, shoulders slumped and looking at the ground. I laughed as Taylor tried to pull palmetto hearts out for Little Bit. It never failed that if we walked in the woods, she'd want one of these treats. Mel shielded her eyes with her hand, looking up at the sun. "It's really nice out today."
"It is. So weird that it's always so quiet here, I replied. Not around camp, I laughed. Guess you're right. We walked for some time through the sugar sand, listening to grasshoppers as they took to the wing in our advance. Taylor and Little Bit stayed out in front of us, leaving a trail of nibbled palmetto shoots in their wake. I looked back at Leanne and tugged on Mel's hand. We slowed, allowing her to catch up to us. As she came up, I wrapped my arm around her. Hey, Buster, how you feeling? I asked. She shrugged. We continued walking in silence. After a bit, I said, You know what happened with Ash wasn't your fault, don't you? She didn't reply immediately. Finally, she said, Taylor said it is. She says it's all my fault. But it's not. I'll talk to her, but you shouldn't blame yourself. She nodded. What else is bothering you, hon? You don't seem yourself, Mel said. Leanne answered with her ever-present shrug, but Mel pressed on. Is there something you want to talk about? No, I'm just tired of being here. I want to see my friends. I want to go home. I'm just tired. Hey, cheer up. It's not the end of the world. We're still here. Besides, we may be going home sooner than you know it, I said. I'd hoped the thought of going home soon would cheer her up, but it appeared to have little effect. At the crest of the small rise in the road, I called the other girls back, telling them we needed to head home. Leanne immediately spun on her heels and headed back for the house, not waiting for the rest of us. Chapter 12. After dinner, Danny, Jeff, me, Taylor, and Little Bit went out on the river with our gigs in hand. I wished we had a spotlight, but all we had were our flashlights. They proved to be sufficient, if not ideal. We took opposite sides of the creek, moving slowly and shining the water's edge. Taylor was holding the light for me as I pulled down the bank, scanning slowly. On the opposite bank, Jeff held the light for Danny. Danny was standing up in the bow of the boat as they glided along. Got one, I called out, as I speared a frog. Little Bit giggled. Danny looked over and smiled, holding his spear. I pulled the frog off and dropped it in a bucket with three others. I had just returned back to spear at another when there was a thunderous boom, followed by a scream and a splash. I immediately turned to see Danny in the water. Jeff was flailing around in the boat. Then he began firing his AK into the trees. Little Bit, get down! Lie down! I shouted, as I sat down and grabbed a paddle. Taylor, paddle over there! Danny! Danny! There was another boom, and I heard the shot as they peppered the aluminum canoe. This time, though, I saw the muzzle flash. Picking up my AR, I began to fire in that direction. Danny's head popped out of the water, and he held on to the side of the canoe. As we got closer, I took up my paddle again and steered toward Danny. We hit a small sandbar and ground to a stop. Suddenly, all the shooting stopped, and I heard Jeff yell, Shit! I looked up to see Jeff changing mags frantically. Taylor, shoot into the trees! No full auto! She nodded and picked up her H&K and started to fire, the suppressor making a spitting sound. Little Bit was lying in the bottom of the boat, wailing. Throwing the sling of my rifle around my neck, I jumped into the water just as Jeff started to fire again. I grabbed Danny under his arms and lifted him up, trying to push him into the boat. He was obviously in pain. Get back to the cabin! I shouted at Jeff. He nodded and grabbed his paddle and began to back paddle toward the camp. I shoved our canoe off the bar and climbed in. Taylor, you paddle! Paddle fast! I said, then started firing into the trees again. There was no more return fire, and after a few minutes, I started paddling too. It was only then that I noticed Taylor's arms were shaking. Good job, Tay! Good job! I said. When we got to the camp, Danny was already out of the boat, bent over at the waist. Thad and Jeff were on either side of him, helping him walk. I grabbed Little Bit and set her out as Mel ran up.
"What happened?" Mel asked, on the verge of tears. "Where was all that shooting from?"
"Someone started shooting. Danny's been hit," I said as I ran off. "Watch the girls." Danny was sitting in a chair by the fire, Bobby beside him, looking nervous and holding a flashlight. Thad and Jeff were pulling his shirt off when I ran up. His left side was covered in little red spots, some bleeding, some like welts. They extended from just under his arm to his hip. It was strange to see where his belt had stopped the shot, leaving a strip of untouched flesh.
"You're lucky, Danny. Looks like it was just birdshot," Thad said, as he dabbed at one of the bleeding spots.
Jeff held up two fingers, a small bead pinched between them.
"Nope, looks like number four."
"I don't know about lucky. It burns like hell," Danny said through gritted teeth.
Using flashlights, we went over Danny's wounds. There were a few that looked like they may have actually penetrated into him. They weren't life-threatening by any means, but they would have to be checked carefully so we could prevent infection. That was the last thing we needed.
"Tomorrow morning, I'll call Doc to get down here and look you over," I said.
"Let's get you into bed," Bobby said, helping him get up.
"Bobby, you want someone to stay with you?" Thad asked.
"No thanks, Thad. We'll be all right. I got it from here."
She headed off toward their cabin as the rest of us made our way toward the fire pit.
"What the hell happened?" Thad asked.
"He was standing up, and someone in the trees took a shot," Jeff said.
"I heard the shot, then heard him scream and hit the water, all at the same time," I said.
"Did you ever see them?" Thad asked.
"Nope. I just started shooting, hoping to make them duck," Jeff said.
"I saw the muzzle flash from the second shot and fired at it for what good it did," I said.
"Yeah, that second one almost got me."
"You were pretty lucky," I said.
"Yeah. If it had been any higher, it'd have gotten me too," Jeff said. "Let's go look at the boat and see where it was hit."
As the beam of the flashlight swept the length of the boat, the light illuminated the spots of raw metal where the shot had raked the side.
"Wonder why that did it," Thad said.
"I bet it was whoever he shot at last night. They probably came for some payback," I said.
Thad nodded. "Could be."
Then he reached in for the bucket sitting in the bottom of the boat.
"No sense in wasting these."
"You're right. I've some in my boat, too. I'll get them," I said.
I dumped my frogs into the other bucket, and Thad carried them up to the fire. Mel and the girls were gone. I told the guys I'd take over on the watch. I needed some time to think. The fire was burning low, so I added a couple of pieces to it. While I was up, I made my way over to the bags of Danny's hotel loot. I rifled through one and picked out a bag of Earl Grey, deciding to make myself a cup. It was cool and quiet. The cloudless sky above was full of brilliant stars, too many to count. Looking through the NVGs, even more appeared. I continued staring at them when something caught my eye. A small light traced a line across the sky. I'd seen this very thing countless times in the before. Now I was struck by it. A small satellite drifting across the sky above me. I wondered what kind it was, whether it worked, or if it was just slowly making its way back down to Earth. Turning off the NVGs, I thought about the satellite for a minute. The fact that it was still up there was very reassuring. Maybe things weren't as bad as we thought. Maybe there were more working systems out there. Or worse, maybe this whole situation was an illusion. That was a horrible thought. To think that someone would let people suffer when something could be done about it. But right now, right here, I guessed it didn't really matter.
Sometime just before dawn, Jeff wandered up. I smiled. You my relief? He yawned as he sat down, leaning his AK on one of the other chairs. Yep. When are you going to call Doc? Right now, I said, getting up. Be right back. I went to where the radio was stored. After checking our code book, I set the frequency and made the call. Stump knocker, Walker. I repeated the call and waited. After a moment, there was a reply. Go for stump knocker. But it wasn't Sarge's voice. Is the old man around? I asked. Hold, came the terse reply. I waited for what seemed like an eternity. Finally, Sarge's gravelly voice came over the radio.
Go for stump knocker.
Can you get that witch doctor down here this morning? After a brief pause, he replied,
Roger that. What's the sit rep?
I thought about how to reply. Brief contact last night. One GSW.
How serious?
Serious enough that I'm calling you.
Roger that. We're on our way. Stump knocker out.
I laid the handset down and crept out of the cabin, back to the fire. Jeff looked at me expectantly.
They coming down here?
Mm-hmm. Sarge said they were on their way, so I imagine they'll be here soon.
Hey, Jeff said as he jumped up. Let's surprise the old man with a cup of coffee.
He pulled out a couple of coffee packets, then filled the pot and set it on the fire. We sat around the fire shooting the shit until we heard the sound of the outboard downriver. Jeff grabbed a cup and filled it with the steaming brew, and we walked down to the river. As the bow ground into the mud, Doc cut the engine. Sarge hopped out, followed by two others I didn't know. Doc hopped out last, shouldering his bag.
Who's been shot, Morgan?
Sarge asked, as he stuck his hand out. I grabbed it, and we shook. Danny. Someone hit him with a scatter gun.
What kind of shot? Doc asked.
It was small, like number four or something.
Not Buck, thank God, I said.
Doc started up the bank.
He in his cabin?
I nodded, and he and one of the other guys trotted off.
Morgan, Jeff, this is Martin, Sarge said.
We shook hands with him.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for coming up, I said.
No sweat. That's Jeremy over there with Doc. He's the closest thing we have to a medic, Martin said. Jeff and I relayed the events of the previous two nights. I told him I thought it could have been someone trying to snatch a hog that came back for a little get-even after Danny shot at them.
Let's go check on Danny, Sarge said,
then looked at the cup in Jeff's hand. Pointing, he asked,
What's in there?
Jeff smiled broadly as he raised the cup to his lips.
Coffee.
Sarge jerked around to face me.
You got coffee? You holding out on me?
I smiled. Yeah, we got a pot on the fire. Why? You want some?
What do you think, dipshit?
Sarge shouted as he pushed past me and stomped off toward the fire pit.
Hey, weren't we gonna check on Danny? I called after him.
The old man waved me off.
He's in good hands. There's more important things at the moment.
Jeff was cracking up.
Man, look at him go.
Yeah, you'd think we told him we had a pot of gold or something, I said, shaking my head.
At the moment, it is a pot of black gold, Jeff said with a grin, slapping me on the shoulder as he started toward the fire pit.
I shook my head and followed him. Sarge was holding the pot in one hand and drinking coffee with the other. As we walked up, he said,
This is some crap coffee.
Then a broad smile spread across his face.
But it's wonderful.
We thought you'd like it, I said. As he poured another cup, he said,
I do. All right, now, let's go check on Danny.
Danny was sitting up, leaning forward. Doc was checking his breathing, having him take deep breaths. Satisfied Danny's lungs were all right, Doc had him lie down so he could start examining the wounds where it looked like actual penetration could have occurred. Doc held a gloved finger against one of them, rolling it around.
That hurt?
Hell yes. Feels like you're sticking a poker in my side.
Yeah, I think there's a piece of shot in there. Jeremy, get that instrument kit out for me.
Jeremy dug into the pack and produced a small OD kit. He took a bottle of alcohol out and cleaned a pair of large tweezers before handing them to Doc.
All right, Danny, this is gonna hurt. I'm about to stick a poker in your side now for real.
Bobby grabbed Danny's hand as Doc gently probed the wound.
There it is, he whispered.
Danny grimaced, and from the look on Bobby's face, he must have clamped down in her hand something good.
Got it!
Doc exclaimed, as he held up a small piece of shot. Danny exhaled loudly and looked over.
It sure felt bigger than that.
Well, let's see how many more there are, Doc said. He pulled three more pieces out before starting to clean all the wounds.
Hell, Danny, next time, duck!
Sarge said.
Yeah, you should have heard him squeal when he was hit, Jeff said, trying to get a laugh.
Danny raised his head.
Let me shoot your ass once, he said with a chuckle. I think you'll be all right. Just keep the wounds clean. I'm not going to give you any antibiotics. Just keep them clean and dry, and you should be all right, Doc said, as he put away his stuff.
You sure he doesn't need any antibiotics? Bobby asked.
Nope. Too often when people went to their doctors for any number of things, they'd get an antibiotic as a precaution. It was one of the worst practices conducted in the medical field. Sure, for some things, you need them. But the just-in-case excuse shouldn't be used. Just keep an eye on them, and if they start to look inflamed, red, swollen, and painful, let me know, and I'll give you something. You guys are pretty healthy, though, so his immune system should handle it fine. Just take it easy for a few days, Danny. No strenuous activities. Try not to get all sweaty. Keep it clean and dry.
Danny nodded as he pulled his shirt back on.
Thanks for coming out, Doc. I really appreciate it.
Doc and Jeremy collected their things and headed out. I walked with Sarge back to the boat. The dogs running beside us, tongues lolling and tails wagging. Sarge looked at the black dog.
Get another dog?
Yeah, I guess you heard about the guy who grabbed Little Bit.
Yeah, I heard. You did the right thing.
He pointed at Drake.
That one was his?
I guess. Can't blame the dog for him being nuts. Sarge smiled and rubbed Drake's head.
Guess you can't.
At the riverbank, Sarge stuck out his hand.
If you guys need us, give me a call, Sarge said.
Thanks for coming down. Really appreciate it, I said.
No problem. You guys just try and stay out of trouble.
I stood in the bank and watched as Doc backed the boat out into the current. They all waved and I waved back, and he opened the throttle and the boat took off downriver. Thad walked up and handed me a frog leg he'd grilled on the fire.
Breakfast?
I took it and smiled.
Thanks.
I sucked all the meat off the bones and said,
We need to get more of these. That was too good.
Got another on the fire for you.
Better hurry up before someone else snaps it up,
Thad said, waving over his shoulder. Chapter 13 Sarge leaned back in his chair, his hands behind his head. Livingston and Sheffield were staring at one another.
Of course, we'll have to see what the guys get out of the recon, but I think it will work.
Sheffield looked baffled.
You really expect to just drive up to the gate and they'll let us in?
Sure. If we roll up looking like a government unit and tell them we're there to add to their security, they'll let us in.
I like giving them the drawing the guys are working on as evidence. Tell them that we have intel that they're being scouted, and we're there to bolster their defenses is very plausible, Livingston said.
I don't know. Sounds like a hell of a way to get killed, and fast, Sheffield said, shaking his head.
Look, there's a lot of confusion right now in the camps and the government. These guys aren't going to know what's up. They'll probably make some calls, but we will hopefully be inside the camp by then, Sarge said.
Hopefully? Sheffield asked.
Once we're in, then what? Start shooting?
No, Sheffield. We'll meet with their CO. Tell him we need to have a meeting with his security personnel ASAP. Once we get as many of them rounded up as we can, we'll just politely disarm them. This could be done without firing a shot, Sarge said with a smile.
I'll meet with their CO? Sheffield shouted.
Why me?
Why don't you just do it if you're the one with this scheme?
Sarge pointed at his collar.
Because you're wearing them oak leaves, not me.
Don't worry, I'll be there as well. But you need to take the lead if we're going to pull this off.
You think we should have some men out at the gate on the backside just in case? Livingston asked.
I do. Plus another squad hidden out front to take down the gate when the time comes.
Sheffield let out a long sigh.
All right, I'm in. If we can do it without having to kill anyone, or, more important, getting any of my people killed, I'm all for it.
Sarge smiled. I knew you would be. Now there's just one more thing we need.
Sarge walked over to the radio and picked up the handset.
Cracker One, Stump Knocker.
After a moment, there was a whispered reply.
Go for Cracker One.
Cracker One, I need you to bring me back a body, the walking, talking kind.
There was a long pause.
Say again, Stump Knocker? Bring back one of them black-clad ninjas, alive.
Ian crawled out of the security position and up to the new hide. They'd moved to get eyes in the rear gate. Ted and Mike were observing the new target. Ian crawled up and grabbed Ted's leg, giving it a shake.
What's up? You got contact?
Ted asked, looking around.
No, just got a call from the old man, Ian paused.
And what's he want?
He wants us to snatch one of these guys and bring him back with us.
Ted was dumbfounded.
He wants what?
Has he finally lost his feeble grip on reality?
I don't know. He's your daddy.
Mike crawled out of the hide.
What the hell's going on?
That crazy old bastard wants us to snatch one of these guys and bring him back with us,
Ted said, as he dropped his face into his hands.
Yeah, so?
So?
How do you think we'll pull that off? They never go anywhere alone. Hell, they never come outside the wire unless they're in a vehicle. How do you think we'll be able to grab one?
Mike smiled.
Easy. We'll take one of them back there.
He jutted his thumb over his shoulder toward the gate they'd been observing.
There's three men there, Mike, Ted said.
No, you're looking at it all wrong. There's only three of them.
Ted was struck by the comment and thought about it, slowly starting to nod his head.
Yeah, you're right. There's only three of them.
Ian smiled. And there's three of us.
Wrong. There's five of us, Ted said with a devilish grin. And, not for nothing, but one of us has a set of tits. Could be a handy distraction.
Ian started to giggle.
There is no way in hell she'll go for that.
She doesn't have to sleep with them or anything. Just get them outside their bunker. Then we can take care of them.
Ian nodded.
So long as she gets to hit one of them, she'll probably do it.
She can beat the shit out of them for all I care. Sarge said alive, not perfectly healthy, Mike said.
All right, let's break this down and call to tell them we're heading in their direction, Ted said.
There's no fucking way I'm doing that, Jamie practically shouted.
Mike held his finger to his lips.
Shh, keep it down.
Just because I'm a woman, I have to be the bait? That's bull.
You're looking at this all wrong.
Yes, you're a woman, and a damn attractive one, too.
Mike's comment caught Jamie off guard,
softening her attitude ever so slightly. He continued, "If you walk out and act like you need help, those goobers will be falling all over themselves to get to you."
"What about my uniform, idiots? They're going to see that."
"I've got a t-shirt under my blouse that I got at a Hooters in Tampa. You can wear that," Ian said. Jamie rolled her eyes. "Oh, that's just fucking perfect." Mike smiled. "Actually, it is. Wear that and act like you're cold."
Jamie pursed her lips together as she thought it over.
"Ugh. Fine. What happens next?" "This is the important part. When all three of them approach, jump the one closest to you and take him to the ground. We'll come out and take the rest of them down," Ted said. She looked skeptical. "All right, whatever. I'll do it. As long as I can kick somebody's ass."
Perez nodded. "Let's get this show on the road."
They used the buggy to get as close to the gate as possible. It was still going to be a bit of a walk to get there.
"It's going to be a long walk dragging one of these guys back with us," Ian said.
Ted laughed.
"One? Hell, if this works, we're taking all three. We can't have the other two going back and blabbing about the plan now, can we?"
Mike started to laugh.
"The old guy's gonna shit.
We need someone to stay here and bring the buggy up so we can load up and haul ass as soon as this is over. I, for one, want to be long gone before they realize their boys are missing," Perez said.
"Good idea. You want to hang back?"
Ted asked. Perez shrugged.
"Guess so."
"All right, Perez stays here, we go in. Soon as we get them trussed up, we'll call him on the radio. He rolls up, and we load up, and get out of Dodge quickly," Ted said. "Sound good?"
They all nodded. Ian then took off his BDU top and stripped off his t-shirt. "Here, Jamie, put this on," he said, as he tossed it to her. She caught the shirt right before it hit her in the face, immediately turning her head.
"Jesus, Ian, take a freaking bath."
Ian laughed as he put his top back on. Jamie took off her body armor. She was holding the shirt and looking at everyone with raised eyebrows. The guys were oblivious, just looking back at her. When she started to strip off her shirt in front of them, all four men were embarrassed and quickly turned away.
"What's the matter, boys? Never seen a woman's body before?"
Now that they were uncomfortable, she was loving it. Jamie couldn't help but grin from ear to ear. Everyone carried the most basic of gear, leaving all the packs and saws with Perez. The four began their stalk, moving quietly and slowly. It took several hours in dark to get within 30 meters of the bunker. A light tower sat behind it, which demanded even more caution. Once they were within 10 yards, Ted nodded to Jamie. She got up from the palmetto scrub and whispered,
"You better be there." "We will, don't worry," he whispered back.
Jamie took a deep breath. Mike grabbed her leg and motioned for her to wait. He pulled her pants off her boots. Bloused boots were a dead giveaway. Once he finished, he slapped her thigh and winked at her. She stuck her tongue out at him and quickly stepped onto the trail. Jamie stood in the trail, shielding her eyes from the lights. She expected someone to come running out, yelling and shouting, but to her surprise, nothing happened. She took a couple of steps, then called out,
"Hello?"
After a moment, a face appeared in the bunker opening, and a very surprised face at that. Then three figures came running out from behind it. Jamie was standing with her arms wrapped around herself like she was cold.
"Show me your hands!" a man's voice shouted.
Jamie held her hands up.
"Please don't shoot! Can you help me? I'm lost!"
The three figures discussed the situation for a moment, then started to move toward her.
"Keep your hands up!"
As the figures got closer, they blocked some of the light. It was then Jamie realized one of them was a woman.
"Well, shit," she thought.
"What are you doing here?" the woman asked.
"I was hoping you could help me.
I'm cold and hungry.
The woman stepped forward.
Where'd you come from?
I've been wandering around the woods for days. I'm lost.
The woman looked her up and down.
I think you're full of shit.
She pulled a set of cuffs from her belt and stepped toward Jamie.
Turn around and put your hands behind your back.
As she moved to cuff her, Jamie jumped on the woman, knocking her to the ground. The woman recovered rather quickly and punched Jamie in the jaw, but it was a glancing blow. Jamie grabbed her by the collar and jerked her head off the ground. At the same time, she tucked her chin and brought the top of her forehead down onto the woman's nose. There was a satisfying crunching sound, and the woman under her went limp. She looked up to see the other two men rushing toward her. Oh, shit, she thought, as they closed in. Suddenly, there were two small pops. Both men went rigid and fell face first into the sand, twitching as the tasers pumped voltage into them. Ian moved in and quickly cuffed one of the men, stripping his weapons and tossing them aside. Ted held the taser on the second one while Mike restrained him. Once both were secured, the guys quickly began getting them ready to move.
Do you know who you're messing with?
One of the men snarled.
Shut up, Ted said, kicking his boots.
Damn, Jamie, Ian crowed. Jamie stood up, blowing her hair out of her face.
You got a little something right there, Ted said, touching his forehead.
Jamie wiped at it and realized it was blood.
Bitch is a bleeder, she said, then spit at her.
The other two men were face down on the ground, taser wires trailing from their bodies. Ian leaned down and put duct tape over their mouths. The one who'd spoken jerked his head, trying to prevent being gagged. Ted hit the trigger on the taser, and the man went rigid, allowing Ian to easily slap the tape over his mouth. Looking up at Ted, Ian smirked.
Thanks,
Ted smiled.
What are friends for?
Jamie looked at Mike. Cuffs, she said, holding her hand out. Mike pulled a flex cuff from his cargo pocket and tossed it to her. Jamie rolled the woman over, securing her hands. She rolled her back over and sat on her chest. Tape. Ian looked at Mike, laughing quietly. Mike gestured with his chin in a "you better hurry the fuck up" manner. Ian tore off a piece of tape and laid it in her palm. With the tape in one hand, Jamie slapped the woman's face on both sides. When her eyes began to open, Jamie smiled and slapped the tape over her mouth. Jamie leaned down close to her.
Take that, bitch.
Mike laughed and parroted her comment.
Take that, bitch.
Jamie looked up at him.
That's hot, Mike said.
You want some? Jamie asked with a sneer.
The tape, or are you sitting on my chest?
Jamie stood up and stepped toward him. In a seductive voice, she said,
I'll sit on your chest.
Her voice quickly changed.
Right after I break your fucking nose!
She finished her statement with a coy smile.
You're a rough girl, Mike said, and smiled. I like it.
Jamie gave him a dismissive wave and turned her attention back to the woman on the ground.
On your feet.
Seconds later, Perez arrived. The three prisoners were rapidly loaded up, and soon they were off and racing down the trails. With the three prisoners, there wasn't room inside for everyone, so Ian was standing on the rear platform, manning the top-mounted saw. Ted and Mike were sitting in the back with the prisoners piled between them. Mike looked over at Ted, grinning.
I can't believe that worked.
Ted was smiling from ear to ear.
Me neither. The old man's gonna piss himself.
They both started laughing.
You boys are welcome, Jamie said.
The guys all looked at her, and she briefly made eye contact with each of them.
Now that I've established that I can take care of myself, there'll be no more guarding the camp, agreed? All right,
I think you've proved yourself, Ted said. That's what I thought, she said with a smirk. Eric's friendship with Kay had blossomed. He looked at her as a motherly figure, and she enjoyed talking to him because he wasn't like the other officers in the camp. So many others had let their positions become their identity and consume their lives. Kay was grateful that Eric provided her with some company, as he was this afternoon.
Doesn't seem like much food, Kay. You skimping out? Eric asked, pointing to the trays.
Kay looked over her shoulder.
These are for the people in detainment.
Really? Jeez, there's so little food.
I'm just doing what they tell me.
Just doesn't seem like enough food. The girls are over there. How are they supposed to hang on with no more food than this? Eric asked. The food is the least of the problems.
Kay picked up a 16-ounce bottle of water. We only send one of these a day over there. I don't know if they can get any more.
Bunch of bastards, Eric said, shaking his head.
Is someone coming to get these? He asked, gesturing toward the trays.
Mm-hmm. They should be here soon.
Eric nodded and plucked a French fry from one of the serving trays. It wasn't long before two men came into the kitchen.
Hey, Kay, these for us? One of them asked.
Yep, they're all yours.
Hey, Cortez, what's up? Eric asked.
Avon, Asek. SOS, how about you?
You called it. Just waiting for the next mission outside the wire.
Dude, you're so lucky getting to leave here, the other man said.
It ain't all that much fun, Hamner, Eric said.
Yeah, well, it's better than dealing with that shit over there.
Eric saw his chance to ask some questions and pounced on it.
How many you got locked up over there? He asked casually.
There's five in there right now. Those murdering bitches and a couple of guys they caught with weapons outside.
Oh yeah, those girls who killed what's-his-name.
Yep, that's them.
He was afraid to ask the next question, but knew he had to.
What are they gonna do to them?
I don't know. They haven't said yet. Said there's some mitigating circumstances.
Might just leave them in there to rot for all I know.
Eric felt his pulse rising, but he knew he had to play it cool.
Hey man, can I go with you and check out the place? Eric asked.
Sure, we could use the help, Cortez said, shoving a couple of trays into Eric's hands and picking up the others. Follow me.
Jess was sitting with her back against the wall. She'd been dreading the moment when Shane woke up, but it was a moot point. It was so dark, he couldn't see her anyway. When he started to come around, she slipped out from under the blankets and put her jumpsuit back on. He reached out to her.
Hello?
Hey, I'm Jess. They put me in here to warm you up. You were pretty close to being hypothermic.
Oh, hi, thanks. Where are my clothes? He replied.
I don't know. They brought you in here without them, she said. Shane was embarrassed at the thought of being naked with her.
Oh, sorry about that.
No problem. Wasn't your fault.
So, why are you and your dad in here anyway?
The DHS jumped us out on the road, shot up our truck. Pretty sure they killed some of my friends and then brought us here.
What did you do wrong? I mean, why'd they start shooting? Jess asked, into the dark.
Wrong? You don't have to do anything wrong these days. All you have to do is be seen by DHS. That's all we're guilty of.
Where did they take you the other day?
I got interrogated, Shane said. He shivered at the thought of what was awaiting him the next time.
Oh, wow, I'm sorry. We haven't experienced anything like that yet.
Pray you don't. I have a feeling things are going to get worse the next time I see him. Shane pulled the blankets tighter around himself. Hearing voices outside, Jess said, "Shh." Shane closed his eyes. Fear swelled in his throat.
The door opened, and the voices got louder and closer to them. Jess's stomach dropped as the key slid into their cell door. Jess quickly lowered her eyes to avoid the light that was surely coming. Shane pulled the blankets up over his head. The door opened, and the light poured in.
"How are our lovebirds today?" Cortez asked.
"Is he still alive?" Hamner asked.
Jess kept her head down, but nodded to the affirmative. "Why are they in here together?" Eric asked. Cortez pointed to the lump under the blankets.
"He had hypothermia, about froze to death. The nurse put her in here to keep him warm, said body heat was the best thing."
"Yeah, I see she's got her clothes back on now. Too bad," Hamner said.
Eric looked at him. "You made her take her clothes off?"
"Yeah. Nurse said it was the best way."
He looked in at Jess and grinned, the light illuminating his face like a jack-o'-lantern.
"Skin-to-skin contact is how she put it."
He laughed, then looked back at Jess.
"You get yourself some skin, darling?"
Eric set two trays down in the cell, resisting his urge to snap the guy's neck. Cortez threw two water bottles in and quickly turned off the light.
"Have fun finding those," he said as he slammed the door.
Fred listened to the exchange and knew there was someone else with them today. Hearing the key slide into her door, she hid her face in her knees. The cell was soon flooded with light.
"This one here is a little firecracker," Cortez said.
Eric's heart stopped when he saw Fred. "She at least looks okay," he thought. As Cortez and Hamner were talking about getting the nurse back in for Shane, Eric knelt down and slid a tray toward her.
"Hang on, Fred," he said, barely a whisper.
Fred thought it sounded like Eric, but she wasn't sure, and she couldn't risk looking into the light. Trusting it was someone friendly, she gave a quick thumbs up with her left hand. Eric saw it and smiled to himself. Cortez threw a bottle of water in, bouncing it off Fred's head.
"There's some water, sweetheart," he said with a laugh.
Eric sucked in his breath. They moved on to Mary's cell. Opening the door, they found her lying on the floor in a fetal position.
"This one is a fucking wreck," Cortez said.
Eric slid a tray in. Mary made no movements. There was no indication that she was even alive.
"Is she dead?"
Eric asked when he stood up. Cortez snorted.
"Not yet."
Calvin didn't bother to cover his face when they shone the light into his cell.
"How are them ribs today, Grandpa?" Cortez asked.
Hamner looked at Eric.
"Yeah, he wanted to play tough guy. Had to take a beating."
Eric slid a tray toward him. Cortez stepped into the doorway and tossed the water bottle into the far corner of the cell, then slammed the door shut. "What's he in here for?" Eric asked, as they moved down the hallway.
"I don't know. He was caught outside the wire somewhere," Cortez said.
Eric nodded, and they headed for the door.
"Well, thanks for the tour. I'll see you guys later."
He was cut off by the camp siren going off. All three men took off running toward their respective assigned posts. Eric ran toward the motor pool where all the vehicles were kept. A Hummer pulled through the gate as he was going through it.
"Vanasek, get in!"
his supervisor shouted, jutting a thumb over his shoulder. Eric climbed into the still-moving vehicle.
"What's going on?"
"Get up in the turret! Someone's hit the rear gate!"
Eric got up into the web straps for the turret gunner and checked the weapon.
"I didn't hear any shots," he thought to himself, as the truck bounced across the camp.
It took several minutes for them to get to the gate. Several others were already there when they arrived. It was obvious there wasn't any kind of a fight, as people were just milling about. Pulling to a stop, they jumped out.
"What the hell happened?"
his supervisor asked.
"They're gone!
All the guards on duty, they've disappeared, one of them answered.
How many were on duty?
Asked another.
An agent came up to Eric as he walked around, checking the trail by the gate.
All three of them are just gone.
A vehicle must have come in here and loaded them up. See all these tracks? Eric said, pointing at the ground. Soon, there were a number of people in the trail, walking over the only evidence they had of what happened. Eric shook his head and walked back toward his truck. It seemed impossible. Someone was able to come in and snatch three of their people and get away without a shot being fired. How in the hell did they do that?
Chapter 14. Thad, Jeff, and I worked together to get the plastic on for the roof. We'd made two ladders out of cane that may have looked like crap, but actually worked very well. After getting the second layer of plastic on, we took a break from the action. The past few days had been filled with projects for making this camp more like home, and man, was it hard work.
Daddy, can we check the squirrel traps? Little Bit shouted as she jumped out of her chair.
I sighed, having just sat down after being on my feet all afternoon. They were empty yesterday, I said.
Maybe we'll get lucky today, Danny said. I shot him a look.
How are the spots, man?
He ran a hand over his side.
Not as bad as you'd think. There's only a couple that actually bother me. I looked over and grinned.
The ones Doc picked at?
He laughed. Yeah, the ones he made better.
You got polka dots,
Little Bit said, giggling.
I rubbed her head. Maybe we should start calling him Spot. What do you think?
Yeah, she shouted and pointed at Danny. Your new name is Spot.
He grabbed her up real quick, swinging her up onto his shoulders.
I got your spots, you little booger.
She squealed with delight as she feigned fighting him off. Seeing her smile melted my heart, especially considering what she had been through the last few days.
All right, Ashley, we can check the traps.
Yay!
She shouted. The first trap we came to had a squirrel hanging from one of the snares. It was still alive and was doing its best to get free.
We got one, Little Bit shouted.
She looked at the rodent for a second, then asked with wide eyes,
Are you going to shoot it?
Nah, shooting it would be a waste, I said, as I looked around for a stick.
Walking over to the set, I grabbed the squirrel quickly by the tail and pulled it tight against the wire, then delivered a swift, hard blow to its head.
Ew! Poor little squirrel,
Little Bit said, a frown creasing her face.
It's the fastest way, dear, Danny said, as he removed it from the snare.
We checked the rest of the snares, finding five more.
It's weird. Nothing yesterday and six today, I said.
Danny nodded.
Yeah, kind of strange. Maybe they needed a day to get used to it.
Good as any reason. I'll go with it, I said with a smile. Little Bit was skipping along in front of us, holding a squirrel by the tail in each hand. I was shaking my head and smiling at the scene before me. An 8-year-old girl 150 years ago would do this. An 8-year-old girl of this generation would run away screaming. Hell, most boys would too. For some reason, society has been bent on destroying the idea of anything masculine or self-reliant. The effects were really starting to show before things changed like they did. I wondered for a moment how the urbanites fared, the ones that never left the city. I mean, during normal times, everything you need is nearby. Grocery stores, transportation, all that. But when the world changed, what did they do now? Did they possess the skills to provide for themselves? As hard as all this was on me, I can only imagine what it was like for them. Back at the camp, we cleaned the rats. It was a simple process, but some of us had never done it before, so I took the position as teacher again. All right. First, you pinch the skin on the back and make a cut across it. Stick a finger in either side and pull. The skin comes off easily. Then, it's like taking off his furry little pants and shirt. Pull the skin down to the feet and cut them off. Then, push the skin down the tail and cut it off. See? Now his pants are gone. Push the skin up toward the head and cut the head off behind it. His furry shirt is gone. There was very little blood during this. Once they were skinned, we gutted them by making small slits in their bellies and scooping their innards out. We took out the meat and saved the entrails for the dogs, who were happy to get them.
I'll cook these in some water. Maybe we can mix them with some rice later, Thad said, as he picked up the cleaned carcasses.
Jeff and I spent the rest of the afternoon cutting wood. It was a never-ending process that was now requiring us to venture farther and farther into the woods. Keeping a fire burning all the time was nice and convenient, but it was starting to become a chore to make it happen. Taylor, Mel, and Bobby all helped with the wood. While we needed nice pieces of split wood, we needed smaller stuff as well. This was where Little Bit really helped. She was a pro at finding kindling-sized pieces.